All right, welcome back to another exciting edition of the SB Nation Houston podcast. With me, as always, is Dylan Gwynn of Sports Talk 790. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing just fine. Thanks for having me aboard.
Now, coming up on Saturday, we have the third preseason game of the Texans. They'll be in San Francisco, which, by the way, I don't know who came up with the preseason schedule, but to have them on the road in San Francisco and Minnesota back-to-back weeks seems a little odd. They usually play a little closer to home.
It's also dangerous in San Francisco.
Yeah, apparently.
I've been reading the headlines.
Oh, geez, yeah. We can get into that maybe here in a little bit. But typically, the third preseason game is the game that you value the most. The starters play generally about three quarters. You get the best look at what they're trying to do. But in some respects, last week's game versus the Saints, just because of the level of competition they're facing, maybe gave us a better indication of what we could expect from the Texans this year. Now, obviously, the Texans' offense looked, there's no other way to describe it, amazing. The defense still got some pressure, but has some issues, same issues with the runs up the middle and pass coverage. What are your overall thoughts and impressions from that game?
Overall thoughts, I mean, I've gone back and forth on this because initially it was just amazing. I mean, 323 first half yards, 181 through the air, 142 on the ground. You know, Matt Schaub's performance, the entire thing was just unbelievable. But then when you start looking at what the Saints did that night and comparing it to what they did against San Francisco the week before, you see a big contrast. I mean, they blitzed San Francisco 18 times in that first preseason game.
I think that was just the first half.
That may have been just the first half, but it was a lot. They blitzed the Texans, I think, less than five times in the course of the entire game when they played them here at Reliance Stadium. So I'm thrilled that everybody's healthy and they look great and stuff like that. But I think I'm not going to use the word sandbagging, but I think the Saints were kind of not being aggressive with their game plan in that situation because they do play the Texans in New Orleans for week three, probably not trying to show a whole lot. So I would be happy that the offense appears humming, but at the same time, be a little bit careful reading too much into that because the Saints really didn't try.
So you would see this as kind of like the Cowboy game last year then.
Exactly, and I said it on my show earlier this week. I mean, almost exactly this same time last year, we were all bouncing off the walls because the Texans, you know, kicked the hell out of the Cowboys here at home at Reliance Stadium. Then, a month later, when the game actually counted, the reverse happened.
Yeah, so that game was ugly.
Exactly. So, I mean, I think you have to be cautious here. Because we as Texans fans should know at this point to not
expect the worst.
Yeah, well, expect the worst, but also not get overboard and over the top optimistic off of preseason wins because we've seen this team do some great things in the preseason and then turn around in the regular season and lay an egg.
I don't disagree with that, but it was nice to see after a preseason in training camp filled with running back injuries to see Foster come out. And looked like not even just that he didn't miss a beat, maybe even got better. On that first touchdown drive, I believe it was the run that put them at the 1, maybe 3 yard line. But Foster had a 9 yard run where he comes up, you know, they run basically the stretch play. He cuts back, makes a jump stop, cuts back the other way, and just, it was like watching Allen Iverson or N1 mixtape just breaking guys' ankles. So to see him look like, you know, he's in midseason form, and then especially to see Ben Tate do what he did was very encouraging. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, especially now knowing you have a second option that's better than Derek Ward at the running back spot. I mean, absolutely, that's going to be encouraging. I don't think it's going to be encouraging for Arian Foster because he wants to go get his money next year.
Yeah, might but, take some carries from him.
Yeah, exactly. Might take some carries from him. And the Texans, of course, will turn around and argue that it's at least 50% the system. At least as much the system as it is the player in reasoning why Arian Foster is having the success he is. Cause if Ben Tate is going out there and doing almost exactly the same thing, then, you know, that argues against Arian Foster getting a king's ransom next year. But,
true.
You know, that's way in the future and nobody cares about that right now. The thing that people care about is what you said, that we have another option at the running back position. He's healthy and it appears to be good.
I think that plays in what you said before with the Saints not blitzing much. Obviously, quarterback protection is an issue with the injuries. Even though last year it was pretty good, they didn't give up very many sacks. That sometimes does get forgotten. But if they can run the ball, and especially with two backs, then that certainly takes a lot of pressure off the offensive line. And hopefully Schaub will stay upright, because when he's upright, he's pretty good, but he definitely is not capable of scrambling out and making plays on the run.
Well, exactly. I mean, the pass protection got off to a bad start last year.
Very bad
start. I mean, they did not start off well, but I mean, as the season wore on, they got better, and they've kept Schaub upright for the last two seasons, and he's had two amazing seasons. So, I mean, yeah, when he's not hurt and when he's upright, he's one of the best.
All right, now going forward to the San Francisco game, obviously people are going to be watching Mario. Despite what Kubiak says, I still haven't been that impressed of his play. Jonathan Joseph coming back. What are you overall looking for in this 49er game?
I'm looking for Mario Williams to give me some kind of sign that he can be an outside linebacker in the 34 defense. I mean, he just, at this point, you have to give me a reason to believe it, because he hasn't, in the first two games, he's given me no reason to believe it. And at the same time, his backup, Brooks Reed, the kid they drafted, you know, high in the second round this year.
Hacksaw.
I like Texan Thor.
Texan Thor?
I think Texan Thor is good.
We can call him whatever you want if he's second quarterback.
There you go. He's looked incredible. So, and Gary Kubiak, you know, for all of his saying that Mario's made great strides and he still has confidence in him and whatever, Brooks Reed is getting time with the starters in this game against the Saints. So, he's saying one thing and doing another. I think there are signs, given that he's playing Brooks Reed with the starters this week, that's at least a sign that somebody has to be a little bit nervous about what's going on with not just Mario Williams, but Connor Barwin too, in the sense that the pass rush, although it's been very good, really has come mostly with the second team outside linebackers, not really the first team outside linebackers. The pass rush with the first team has come from two places. It's been Antonio Smith and J.J. Watt.
Yeah.
With the exception of the Xavier DB sack against Mark Sanchez in the first game, it's really come from those two guys. It hasn't come from the outside backers. So that's something that has to be obviously addressed.
I think that it's a good point. For all that's been made of Mario changing positions, learning a new defense, I mean, Brooks Reed played some defensive end in college. He was in a 4-3.
Right.
So plus, he's a rookie. So if he could come on and make this quick of a jump and play at that level, for a guy with Mario's talent, I think the same standard should be held with him. And it brings up a big question to me. I mean, some people will argue, well, we've only seen him in two games. Give it a chance. Try to stress patience. And while I most of the time agree with that, we knew Mario didn't have the quick burst and leverage of advantages of the elite pass rushers,
right,
especially outside linebacker.
Yeah.
So if this doesn't work, which I think we both agree is looking like a no, it will not work, do you put Mario inside? Do you put him at defensive end? Do you look to make a trade? What is your plan of attack?
My initial inclination is to go to the Eagles and find out what they want for Asante Samuel. Because, I mean, at this point, you know, the Eagles are an unbelievably talented football team. There's no
dream
doubt
team.
About it. Yeah, no, dream team. You know, according to the guy who's not even going to
be. Yeah, he's their Christian Leitner.
According to the guy who's getting beaten out by Mike Kafka for the backup position right now. But anyway, a different topic. Their pass rush hasn't been that great.
Right.
And what I've seen from them so far this year, Mario Williams is a hand and glove fit in the 43 defense. He would help. You put Trent Cole and Mario Williams on either side of a defensive line.
That's nice.
That's scary. I mean,
yeah,
a lot of teams would want that. They also have Cullen Jenkins. So that to me would make sense, especially since you kind of have this embarrassment of riches at the cornerback position. And remember, this is one salient point about football. Having great corners is great, but even an average NFL quarterback, if he has time, even if you have a great group of corners out there, if he has time in the pocket to survey the field and check off his different receivers, he's going to find somebody
right
at some point. I don't care if you have Asamoah and Darrell Revis out there together. Somebody's coming open at some point. And if you have time, they'll find him. You'll have a lot less time if Mario Williams and Trent Cole are on the line. And I think that, you know, that's a move that I think the Eagles would be receptive of, especially considering this. Remember, this is the gamble the Texans are taking if they leave Mario Williams on the roster this year. This is the last year of his contract.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if he doesn't work out, not only do you get not great production from your outside linebacker, but you're going to lose him for nothing. I mean, wouldn't it be better?
Do you think he demands Julius Peppers type money? Or at least, I mean, not that he would necessarily get it.
No, he's
but
not
he's,
get
he's,
that.
He, I, you would have to assume that he's going to ask for it.
Oh, of course he will. And he can't get it from this team because
no,
he doesn't fit
Texans
the system
don't have
anymore.
Enough money.
So that's the thing. Even if Brooks Reed isn't 100% ready yet, wouldn't it be better to let him figure it out for the first 3 or 4 weeks of the season and get a great corner like Asante Samuel to put alongside Jonathan Joseph instead of taking this enormous gamble that Mario Williams is going to become a 10-12 sack outside linebacker guy, which at this point it looks like he's not capable of. When you think about the San Francisco game this weekend, that's what I think about the most. To me, this game is all about Mario Williams.
Yeah.
Because the verdict is in after this week. In my opinion.
Yeah, right, because they're not going to play in Minnesota.
Yeah, you're not going to play Minnesota. So, I mean, the off-season look at him as the outside linebacker is done this week.
Well, at least you might have an extra preseason game week one, because it looks like Kerry Collins could possibly be starting. Now,
do we dare hope for that?
I'm going to hope for it. But think about this. This is a year where you have Peyton Manning, who's it looks like he's going to miss at least a little bit of time. I mean, ultimately, unless you cut off his legs, he's going to get on the field probably sooner than we would think. But
yeah.
I think it's a real possibility he misses up to, two games, maybe three. You also have Chris Johnson holding out. We talked about no excuses before, but this year's looking like no excuses. You look at that division. Now, if Peyton Manning does miss in 5 of your 6 division games, you're going to be facing Kerry Collins, the David Garrard, Blaine Gabbert tandem in Jacksonville, and the Jake Locker Hasselbeck tandem in Tennessee. If you don't win, if you don't go 4-2 in the division with that schedule, I mean, shouldn't everybody be gone at that point? We talked about no excuses. This is the year.
The Germans have a term.
Okay.
To describe.
I was scared where this is going.
The Germans have a term to describe delighting in the misfortune of others, and it's called Schadenfreude. And I am experiencing a little
bit
of
Schadenfreude.
I think it's SEC safe. Yeah. Schadenfreude is exactly what I'm experiencing right now in this division. Because everybody else, you look at it, look at the 4 teams in the division. There's only one team you can say, honestly, that looks like it's improved from last year to this year, and that's the Texans.
Yeah.
Nobody else in this division looks like they're better than what they were last year. It's just the Texans. So, and honestly, after 10 years of, complete and utter...
Do we have to go down this road?
10 years of complete and utter failure, I'm not going to cry for anybody. I mean, look, if we get the breaks for once, then I think that, that's good. And that we should get that. And honestly, the Texans need to be in a position to take advantage of that. Now, I thought Curtis Painter and Dan Orlovsky were so awful in their last preseason game that the Colts might have made this move just because, regardless of Peyton Manning's condition. But the thing that kind of changed my mind about that was when I read that Kerry Collins is getting $4 million to play this year.
That's not backup money.
Now, you're not paying a guy $4 million bones if you think he's just going to be riding the pine for the entire season.
No.
I mean, you're anticipating that he's going to be playing some if you pay a guy that kind of money. So there may be some credence to it. I know Peyton loves his consecutive game streak, but like we were talking about yesterday, would he risk his season, his team season, and his career just to uphold that streak?
I don't think he will. Did you read Reggie Wayne's quote from yesterday?
That they're taking a step back now.
Basically, the
most obvious thing. Well, look,
he's got a future at ESPN analyzing games, doesn't he?
Unless you're bringing in Tom Brady or Philip Rivers, obviously you're taking a step back. You can't. 30 of 32 quarterbacks in the NFL, or 29 of 32 quarterbacks in the NFL, are steps back from Peyton Manning.
I mean, that's the obvious, but I think overall what he was suggesting was that the offense that they run is not a cookie cutter, easy to learn offense. It's complicated. So it almost seemed like he was advocating putting in a Curtis Painter that knows the offense via, he can't do anything with it, but he knows the offense versus a Kerry Collins.
So we need to clone Curtis Painter's mind into Kerry Collins' body.
Unless they get that done, though, that it looks like another bye week. I mean, if Payton doesn't play, I mean, I know he's going to play at some point this season, probably at least 12, you know, 14 games. But if he didn't play, I mean, we're talking about
the 5-11 team,
4-12,
best,
5-11
at
team.
Best. No, and that's the thing. I've always made the argument that every year Peyton Manning should be the MVP, not because he's the best quarterback in the game, but because he is the most valuable player. Because if you take him off that team, they are a 3-13, 4-12 club. You know, when Tom Brady went down for the Patriots, I mean, they went 11-5 that year.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, when Aaron Rodgers got hurt last year, the Packers went on the road and almost beat the Patriots at Gillette Stadium on Monday night.
Yeah, I think they only lost by one score. Yeah.
Matt Flynn is the quarterback. So, I mean, it's, you look at it, no team in the league is more reliant on one player than the Indianapolis Colts are on Peyton Manning.
Yeah, it almost reminds you of LeBron with the Cavaliers, you know, before he obviously made the switch to Miami. All right, well, we certainly have an interesting week or two ahead of us before the Colts come to town week one, but hopefully we'll get some answers and we'll check back with that next week. Now, moving on to a team with no playoff hopes, I would say. Mm. I think that's a fair assessment. I believe they actually have been mathematically eliminated at this point. But the Astros, even though they took a few losses on the field, got swept in Colorado, were still busy. It looks like they almost might send one player over from one dugout to the other dugout when Wandy Rodriguez went through waivers and was claimed by the Colorado Rockies. Of course, he was pulled back. I mean, your thought? I mean, should they just let him go and save the $24 million? What?
No, I don't think so. I'm against just an outright salary dump. I mean, I think you let those players go if you think that you're going to get something in return. I mean, you know, Wandy Rodriguez was not some scrub player. I mean, over the last 3 years, Wandy Rodriguez...
Yeah, he wasn't Brett Myers.
No, been one of the better left-handers in the National League over the last 3 years. I mean, I think you need to get something for him. I mean, if you had a situation like a Brett Myers, where the guy's making $10.5 million and is terrible and has no trade value, then yeah, go ahead and do a salary dump. But when you've got a guy like Wandy, who's making almost, you know, a little bit more than Brett Myers, but is significantly better than Brett Myers,
yeah.
You've got to get something in return for that. And if the Rockies were not going to be willing to part with significant prospects for Wandy, then I absolutely agree with the Astros pulling him back off the table. I mean, that's not – salary dumps are for players that are a waste.
Yeah, Wandy
– you know, Wandy is not a waste.
He's not a waste. No. I would agree with that. I mean, I still believe that they should and will try to trade him. But I think you're right. They probably heard the offer, thought it wasn't good enough, and will go into the – owners meetings in December and try to trade them there.
Exactly. I mean, why not? Where's the fire? I mean, like you said, the team's not going anywhere mathematically.
He's got a couple years left. There's no rush.
The prospects you get for him aren't going to get here. What, we're going to be 3 months later getting here? Whatever. Who knows if they'll ever become anything. I mean, it makes every bit of sense in the world to wait.
I agree. Well, thank you for joining us, Dylan.
Anytime, brother.